Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com. Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
So she didn't explain why the gun was there or why Alex wasn't part of this initial phone argument?
Correct.
Did Lori ever tell you during your interview that Charles started this argument?
No.
During your interview of Lori Vallow, was it always her saying that it was her that started this argument because she would not give Charles back his phone?
Correct.
So she told you that she was afraid of Charles coming over, invited her brother over to protect her, and then she started a fight by refusing to give Charles back his phone.
Correct.
During this interview, did Lori tell you that after Tylee went out to be with JJ, that Charles came at her with a bat?
Yes.
And that she moved into the kitchen and that while she was not able to see what was going on, she hears a shot?
That's correct.
If I can have my paralegal approach with Exhibit 193. Clip 9. Do you recognize Exhibit 193?
I do.
Did you initial and put your ID on that?
I did.
And is that a portion of this where, of your interview with Lori Vallow, where she talks about what her brother is doing and Charles is doing and her walking around with, into the kitchen with the phone?
Yes.
The state will move to admit Exhibit 193.
Same objection, Your Honor.
All right, 193 submitted.
And if we may publish.
Go ahead.
Yeah, she was outside.
And then what happened?
Then they got up from that, and my brother had, like, stepped back, I guess, and then Charles was coming with me at the bat and yelling at me to give him his phone, mm-hmm. still, because I had it in my hand. It was all really quickly, mm-hmm. and then when I went around kind of in the circle, then my brother was there.
When you were going around and he was coming at you with the bat,
mm-hmm.
how was he holding the bat?
Just like that. Like backwards. Almost in one arm.
Like he was swinging, but like swinging it backwards? He would have done like...
Like he would have swung it backwards at me, not frontwards.
Okay.
Do One second. So in this clip, she's describing to you how Charles was swinging the bat at her, correct?
Correct.
And in that clip, does she go on to talk to you about whether or not her husband was a semi-professional baseball player?
She did, yes.
And she told you that, again, Charles is holding a bat and yelling at her to give him his phone?
Correct.
And she didn't give him back the phone?
She did not.
Did she talk to you about whether or not she saw the shot?
Yes.
Did she say she saw it or not?
She did not see the shot. She heard the shot.
So she indicated she does not. Did she indicate whether or not she saw her gun, her brother pull out a gun?
No.
Did she indicate whether or not she saw her brother go get a gun?
She did not.
Did she indicate how many shots she heard?
She specifically said the shot, as in one shot.
Did you at some point, well, let me ask again. So you had not been into this residence yet?
No.
So when she's telling you she's going around, did you understand what that was?
Not really, because I hadn't been inside. She was kind of describing the kitchen and the room they were in, but I hadn't seen it firsthand.
Okay. When you were talking to Lori Vallow, did you ask her if Charles or her brother Alex had said anything before Alex shot Charles?
Yes.
And did she indicate she doesn't recall hearing that?
Correct.
And if my paralegal can approach with exhibit 195, clip 11. Do you recognize exhibit 195?
I do.
And again, it's your initials and badge on that.
It is.
And is that portion of the interview where you asked her if she'd heard anything said between Charles and Alex prior to the shooting?
Correct.
State will move to admit 195.
Same objection.
Same objection, Your Honor.
195 is admitted.
And if we may publish.
I gotta get to the kids. Mm-hmm. And so I just went outside and to see if they were in there okay. I didn't want them coming back in the house when all that was going on. And got Gigi in the car and he was trying to come in. Mm-hmm. And Tylee was like looking at me.
Little 11.
That's actually the wrong one. Well, play that one, I guess. Let me see, and we'll talk about that one since admitted. Okay.
We're going to play that one?
Yeah, we'll play it and talk about it.
Hey.
To get to the kids. Mm-hmm. And so I just went outside and to see if they were in there okay. I didn't want them coming back in the house when all that was going on. And got Gigi in the car and he was trying to come in. Mm-hmm. And Tylee was like looking at me with like the crazy eyes, like what just happened. And I told her to get in the car and we're going to take Gigi to school. Mm-hmm. And I just left.
When you came back in and you saw him on the ground, where was your brother? Did you see him where he was at?
Yeah, he was right in front of him.
Okay.
So in exhibit, what we have is 195, Is that actually then the portion where she's talking about what she did after as well as what Alex was doing when she went back in there?
Correct.
So she advised you that after she heard this shot, she just left.
She did. She went outside.
And then drove off in Charles's rental car?
Correct.
And she told you that when she saw Charles on the floor, Alex was standing in front of him.
Correct.
Did you ask her to describe any distance of how far away?
I did not.
And then if we can approach then with what is code number? I think that is exhibit 194. Is that, again, a portion of this interview where we're talking about the shots, actually?
Correct.
And you watched that previously and initialed it and put your badge number on it?
I did.
Okay, we'll move to admit 194.
Same objection, Your Honor.
194 is admitted.
He was a professional baseball player.
Okay.
So it wasn't a good idea for Tyler to get out of that.
Probably not the.
I mean, he played semi-pro when he was young. But, yeah, and then I was kind of turned around, and we were all right there in that room, except for the kids had been outside by that time, and I heard the gunshot.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you heard the shot?
Mm-hmm.
Did you actually see the shot, or did you just hear it?
I had gone around
mm-hmm.
to the kitchen to get away from him, and so back around. So I don't know if you went in the house.
I didn't, so I'm like a little bit of a disadvantage.
Yeah, so I didn't see when... I didn't see the shot, I heard it, and then I came back around, and I saw that he was on the ground.
Okay.
So... again, that's the portion where she is advising you that she only heard the shot but didn't see the shot.
Correct.
So she's advising you she doesn't know what her brother was doing.
Reasonably, yes.
During this whole interview that you had with Lori Vallow, did she ever tell you that she handed over the phone to Charles?
She did not, no.
So during the initial confrontation when it's just her and Charles and he's demanding her phone, she won't give it back to him?
Correct.
When her daughter comes out and involves herself in this altercation, she wouldn't give him back the phone?
Correct.
And she advised that he's still at that point demanding his phone?
Yes.
And again, he's there to take JJ to school, right?
Right.
And then her brother comes out, and again, he's demanding the phone, and she still won't give it to him?
Correct.
Did she ever explain to you why she didn't just hand the phone back over?
She did not, no.
If I can have my paralegal approach with 286. Have you looked at Exhibit 286 before?
I have.
And is your initials and badge on that?
It is, yes.
And is that a copy of the full interview?
It is, yes.
So it includes whatever conversations you had about throughout that, about Charles Vallow and her views on him?
Yes.
And repeatedly that she never gave the phone back to Charles Vallow?
That's right.
State will move to admit 286.
Same objection.
Same objection, Your Honor.
286 is admitted.
No, I played it this time. Did Lori Vallow ever call 911?
She did not.
Not playing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're wrong. Do you know who called 911?
I believe Alex Cox called 911.
We've discussed that she had multiple cell phones, correct?
Correct.
And so did you later learn that she also had Charles Fallow's cell phone?
I did.
So she has at least two cell phones with her, but she did not call 911.
That's correct.
After you interviewed Lori, did you have to get her and Tylee back to where the car was?
I did, yes.
Did you and someone else drive her, Tylee, and Alex Cox back?
Myself and, at the time, Detective, but now Lieutenant Moffitt did.
So can you tell us about that?
So the interviews were concluded, and we were going to get them back to the house. The search warrant was still ongoing at the house, but to get them back to get vehicles, they weren't in custody. So I obtained our victim services has a minivan because it just holds a lot of people. And we use the minivan to take everyone back to the scene instead of driving two different cars with people. So I drove and Detective Moffitt sat in the very back. Tylee was sitting up front with me and Lori and Alex were behind me.
Okay. What was Lori's demeanor in the car with her brother and you and Moffitt?
She was unaffected, not emotional. The best description I can give is that she chattered the whole way, basically, back to the house. Not upset, almost not happy, but just really unaffected by everything that was going on. It was kind of striking.
Is there any acknowledgement about what had happened?
No.
Basically just talking like it was any other day?
That's a good description, yes.
Did you ever hear her talk about or say anything like, oh, I need to let Charles Vallow's sons know that he's dead?
No, not specifically. She had referenced at one point, like, calling people, but not that she needed to, like, do additional, like, death notification.
When you got back to the 5531 South Four Peaks place, did you see Lori, Alex, and Tylee leave in that red Kia SUV?
They did. They left in the rental car.
Okay. What did you do initially after that?
So that was the first time that I came into the house. I came just into the threshold first part of that room. Detective Coons and Detective Duncan were finishing the search warrant, and they were talking about some of the things that they had found. And there was some initial kind of discussion between us, and then I ultimately left because I had a different case to go work on. So I left to go do something else.
Did you go back to the police station?
I did.
Around 2 or so, did you get a call to see if you could help find Lori or Alex to come back to the house?
Yes. The detectives that were at the scene that were done doing, they were finishing the scene investigation. They were wondering if I could try to get in touch with Lori or Alex to try to get them to come back to the scene because their intention was to try to do a walkthrough and some additional investigation. So I made a couple phone calls to the number that Lori had provided to me.
So you made more than one call to that 808 number?
I believe 2.
Did you leave a message?
I left a message, yes.
Okay. After you had called and tried to reach her, what did you do?
I ended up going back to the scene very briefly while they were finishing, and at that point, Alex had come back to the scene. Lori and Tylee were present with that red rental car again, and I was outside, and they were the other detectives were inside finishing up crime scene work.
Okay. Did you ever learn from Detective Coons or Duncan that they had searched the house and they couldn't find Charles's cell phone?
When I went back the second time, the detectives on scene, Coons and Duncan, had said that they couldn't find his phone.
And you had interviewed Lori, so you knew that at some point she'd had it, right?
Correct.
And she had, in fact, told you multiple times that she had refused to give it back to Charles, right?
That's correct.
But you had never asked her, do you still have it?
I did not.
So you're at the house, you see Lori and Tylee. Did you go ask her about it?
I did.
So can you tell us about that?
I walked up to where the vehicle had pulled up. Tylee was actually still inside the car, and I asked them if they knew where Charles's phone was, and at that point, they volunteered that they had the phone. I believe Tylee pulled it out of the cup holder to hand to me, and I asked them if they knew what the passcode to the phone was, and both of them were able to give me the passcode, and I took custody of the phone from them.
Did Lori tell you anything about where she found the phone?
I think she said that she found the phone in the car.
Okay. When you were asking her about her now deceased husband's phone that she found in the car, what is her demeanor like when she's interacting with you again here?
It's the same that it's been the whole time. Pretty calm and kind of unaffected by what's going on.
Did it seem odd to you that she said that she found that inside his car when she was talking to you about having it in her hands and refusing to give it to Charles?
It struck me as a little odd, yes.
So they give you the phone, and you said that you were able to get the passcode or PIN for it. Did Lori say she knew it as well?
Lori and Tylee.
And what was the passcode?
I believe it was all zeros.
Okay. Did you ever check to see if that would open the phone?
I did not.
Did you later give Charles's phone to be given to Detective McDonald?
I did.
You have a paralegal approach with 245. Do you remember or know what, recognize what Exhibit 245 is?
I do.
And what is that?
So this is evidence item 131035-1, and it's a cell phone in a black case. And then it's kind of common practice, the passcode's on a sticky on the phone.
Is that the phone that was given to you by Tylee with Lori there?
I believe so, yes.
Did you provide that to Officer Allness to then give it to a Detective McDonald?
So Sergeant Allness, at the time of this, was the sergeant over our computer crime section, which is where Detective McDonald worked. And it's common practice for us to hand turn over items to them so they can do exams.
And does that phone have the... the number for this case and other information to indicate to you that it is the phone that you got from Lori Vallow and or Tylee?
It does.
So each case, is there a specific number? Each case has their own DR number or incident number?
So each investigation will have their own DR number, and then our evidence, each item generates its own unique evidence item number, and those numbers are associated specifically with the specific report number.
And does that then tie in specifically to the phone that we've been discussing that belonged to Charles Vallow?
Correct.
The phone that Lori had talked to you about as the whole reason this whole incident occurred.
Right.
The state will move to admit 245.
Any objection?
No objection.
245 is admitted.
Did you later then submit a request to have an examination or extraction done of Charles's cell phone?
Correct.
And then you said you used the sticky on the front to let them know how to get into it.
Correct. We'll put it, if we know it, we'll put it in the request, but oftentimes we'll put it directly with the phone also.
Right. I have no other questions for this witness, Your Honor.
All right, cross.
Detective Inkland, who was the case agent on July 11th, 2018?
That would have been Detective Moffitt, who's now Lieutenant Moffitt.
Okay. And then when did the switch happen from Detective Moffitt to Detective Duncan being the case agent? Do you know?
When Detective Moffitt was promoted to Sergeant Moffitt. Once you're promoted, you go back to patrol as a supervisor. So when you leave the unit, we reassign case officer responsibility to a detective that's currently inside the unit. So if somebody retires or promotes, that case agent responsibility would shift over to someone else.
Okay. Do you know when that was about?
I don't.
Was it like sometime in that year, 2019, or much later?
I don't know.
Okay. You had talked about when you got the call to come and respond to the house on July 11th. About what time was that?
It was probably about 10 or 15 minutes after the initial radio traffic. I just remember I was on the 202 going westbound and my phone rang.
And when you showed up, you had stated that Alex was seated on the curb, is that correct?
He was, the first time I noticed him, yes.
And you also stated that an adult female and Tylee were already across the street when you arrived?
No.
Oh, we weren't there yet?
No.
Okay. How long after you arrived did we arrive?
I don't know when you arrived. I just became aware of you at some point. I did not see you arrive. You were not there when I got there, but at some point you got there and I became aware of you outside.
Okay. But you weren't in the house, correct?
No.
In the morning? So where were you that you didn't see us coming up at that, in between that time?
I was in front of the house.
And was your view obscured by something?
I don't believe so.
So you didn't see us drive up, you just noticed us being there at some point?
Correct.
Okay. And when you first saw us, what were we doing? Were we talking to the officer?
I believe so.
Or waiting to talk to the officer?
When I first saw you, Officer Krautheim was standing with you, and it appeared like you were all talking together. I couldn't hear you from where I was at. I just noticed you.
Okay, so you saw him talking to us, but you didn't see us initially come up before when he told us to stay where we were. You didn't see that part.
I just became aware of you standing there.
Okay. And you talked about my demeanor, right? Being ordinary. Is that what you said?
Being ordinary?
You said ordinary, non-emotional, nonchalant.
Correct.
What's your definition of nonchalant?
Pretty almost detached, just calm, doesn't really matter, kind of not extraordinary.
Do you have a degree in psychology?
I do not.
Do you know what a person should act like if they're in a stressful situation?
So there isn't one way to act. There's just behavior that is striking.
Striking behavior?
Correct.
Okay. At some point when you came over to talk to me and my daughter, did we express to you that she needed her medications that were in the house?
I believe so, and that.
And what did you instruct us about?
At one point, I advised the detectives that were inside of that request, but that a search warrant was happening inside the house, so we would do our best to facilitate people getting things from the house. But the search warrant's going to take precedence to what's going on.
Right, so basically that it's a crime scene and we can't really enter, but someone would try to get them for her?
Correct.
Okay, and did someone go and get them for her?
At that point, we did not have a search warrant. We weren't going to be entering the house or removing any items from the house. We didn't have legal authority to go in and remove items without a search warrant. So nothing was going to be removed from the house at that point.
But you were aware that she needed her panic attack medicine?
Objection. I was a question as to testifying and asked and answered.
Sustained, you can ask her if she was aware that she needed that medication.
You were aware that she needed her medication?
I was aware you made a request for her medication.
And it would have been non-emotional if I was trying to be calm for my daughter?
I'm going to object to speculation.
Sustain.
Were you being calm?
I believe so.
Was Officer Krautheim being calm?
I think so.
Were the firefighters being calm?
I didn't see the firefighters or have any interaction with them.
Were the other detectives being calm?
I believe so.
The EMS guys were being calm?
Again, I didn't see them and have any interaction with them.
But it was a pretty calm environment that day, was it not?
I don't know if I'd agree with that, but...
Well, no one was running around hysterical, right?
Correct.
Okay. The information that you received from the briefing, was that from Officer, is it Krautheim? Krautheim? Sorry,
Krautheim.
Krautheim. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Was Officer Krautheim the one that gave you the briefing on what had happened?
So Officer Krautheim and Officer Wisbicki, who Sergeant Wisbicki now, provided information to the detectives and my sergeant that had arrived.
And then who briefed you personally?
So it's a kind of a collective conversation where the initial information is provided and then we start doing assignments, basically.
Right. So Officer... Sorry, say his name one more time.
Krautheim.
Krautheim. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to write that in phonetically.
Again, object.
I'm sorry.
Testifying.
So... He was wearing a body cam, is that correct, that day? Officer Krautheim.
Correct.
And so was that briefing on body cam?
I don't know.
Now, you talked about the death notification to me and to Tylee. You said that Tylee and I were in the van. Is that correct?
Correct, when I came over to talk to you.
And who was with you?
My sergeant, Sergeant Lockwood.
And was Detective Moffat not with you as well?
He was not.
And so you had stated that you had asked me to get out of the van? Is that correct?
I was trying to get you to come. My intention was to get you to come out of the van. And then you made a statement that you were there. You already knew.
What did you say that made me say that I was already there?
I was asking you to step out of the van. And you said, I was there. I already know.
I already know what?
That Charles had died. I was trying not to tell you in front of your daughter.
That would have been nice, but that wasn't the point. How did I know you were coming to give me a death notification?
Can I object to speculation?
Sustained.
Did you notify me that I'm going to give you a death notification? I don't want to do it in front of your daughter. What did you say?
It would be slightly redundant to tell you I was doing a death notification if I didn't want to tell you in front of your daughter.
Why would I say to you, I already know
to
sustain, that's the form of the question calls for her to speculate about your state of mind.
So did you speak to me giving me a death notification, or was it Lockwood, sorry. Who spoke to us?
We were both involved in the conversation.
And what was said to us?
You said that you were there and you already knew. And at that point, shortly thereafter, I asked you if you and Tylee would come back to the station to do interviews so I could talk with you.
You asked us if we would come, or you said we're going to go down to the station and interview you?
I asked you if you would come. It was a consensual contact. It was a voluntary interview.
And is this on body cam?
I did not have a body cam at the time, no.
Did Lockwood have a body cam?
He did not. He was assigned to two investigations.
So we voluntarily went to the station. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you drove. Is that correct?
I did.
And it was a 20 or so minute drive.
About that.
And we arrived at the station, and you separated us into two rooms. Is that correct?
Correct.
And did you ask me permission to speak to my minor daughter?
I indicated to you that I wanted to interview both of you, and that we would go do the interviews in the Family Advocacy Center.
And what is the protocol for interviewing a minor?
It depends on the circumstances where you're interviewing them.
Okay, and are you a certified forensic interview of children?
I am.
And so would that be something that you would ask the parent if you could interview the minor child?
It depends on the circumstances.
Okay, and did you ask me?
I did not specifically ask your permission.
Did you ask Tylee if she wanted to be interviewed?
I don't object to hearsay.
Well, the question, I'll overrule the objection. The question is, did you ask Tylee yes or no?
I did at one point ask if I could speak with her.
Did either of us know that we were being videotaped?
I don't know.
Were we told that we were being videotaped?
No.
At that time, when we entered into the rooms, You left Tylee in there alone and came in to interview me, is that correct?
Correct.
And how long was that interview that you and I had?
I think it's about 35, 40 minutes, maybe a little longer.
And so that whole time, Tylee was in the room by herself?
Correct.
Not knowing she was being videoed?
Correct.
I don't know if she knew or not.
And without her medication? Correct.
I don't know, but I believe so.
And I was worried about her, if you recall. Is that correct?
Object to relevance.
Sustain.
Do you always wear your gun when you are doing a forensic interview of a child?
The majority of the time now, yes, because my assignment's different. When my assignment was in our family violence unit and I was doing forensic interviews of child victims, then no.
Did you treat us like we were victims that day?
Actually, yes.
And did you think that wearing your gun might be intimidating to a child?
No, given her age, no.
Is that your normal protocol?
I object, asked and answered.
She can answer, overruled.
For which part?
For wearing your gun doing a forensic interview of a child.
So I wasn't doing a DFI of Tylee. I was doing an interview with a witness to a scene. If it was a DFI, it would be different.
How would it be different?
So a dedicated forensic interview of a child is much different. It's structured much different. It's conducted much differently. And they're typically done of victims of very specific allegations. Physical child abuse, sexual child abuse, things along those lines. The interview with Tylee was done basically as a witness interview. I did defer some to almost like a victim status, but her interview wasn't a DFI. It wasn't done as a dedicated forensic interview. She was a witness, a potential witness to a homicide.
How long did you interview Tylee for?
I believe we talked for about similar amount of time, 30, 40 minutes.
At the time, that day on July 11th, did you believe Tylee?
I'm going to object.
Sustain.
With your experience in forensically interviewing children, did you think Tylee's demeanor was genuine that day?
I'm going to object to speculation.
Sustain.
Did you have a reason to think that she might be making something up?
We're going to object again to speculation.
Sustained.
Did you learn during Tylee's interview?
I'm going to object right there to hearsay.
Sustained.
Did you learn during my interview that Tylee came in with a bat?
I did.
And was that confirmed by Tylee?
I'm going to object, Your Honor, pretrial ruling, hearsay.
Yeah. Sustained.
Your Honor, can we have a sidebar?
No, that's hearsay. It's sustained.
At the end of our interviews, Detective Inklin, where did you put us?
You stayed in the Family Advocacy Center until we were ready to leave.
And did you put us in a room with a victim's advocate?
I did.
And introduce us to her?
I did.
And we spoke to her?
I believe so, yes.
And then after however long that was, then you came in with my brother Alex, is that correct?
We met them outside of the Family Advocacy Center, and then we left to go back to the house.
And you stated that I chatted the whole way back. Is that correct?
You did.
It wasn't Tylee and Alex chatting the whole way? It was me specifically?
You mostly.
It wasn't me just looking out the window and them talking to you.
I'm going to object to asked and answered.
You can answer. Overruled. You can answer.
Can you ask it again?
It wasn't Alex and Tylee speaking to you and me just looking out the window the whole way home?
No.
And then when we got back to the house, what happened then?
You, Tylee, and Alex left in the rental car, the little red like SUV, and I spoke briefly with the detectives who were on the scene.
Who told us to leave in the rental car?
I don't recall who told you. I just know that Alex could not take his vehicle because the search warrant was still going and the vehicle was on the curtilage of the property.
Right. So we were told we couldn't take the truck. Is that correct?
I believe so.
And we were told we couldn't take Tylee's Jeep. Is that correct?
Correct. It was in the garage.
And we couldn't take my car because it was in the garage as well?
I believe so.
And so our only alternative, because we couldn't enter the house, is that correct?
Correct.
And that we were told that we could come back later, but not at that time. Is that correct?
At the conclusion of the search warrant, yes.
And so we were told that we could take the rental car because it wasn't behind the police tape. Is that correct?
Correct. It wasn't part of the search warrant.
That we could leave and that we could come back later after we picked up JJ from school. Is that correct?
You could come back, assuming you picked him up from school, yes?
Well, that's not what we were instructed to do.
Objection. Again, testifying.
Sustained.
So we left, is that correct? And then you entered the house after that?
You left, correct. And I entered the house after that, correct.
And what did you do inside the house after we left?
I had some brief discussion with the detectives who were on scene and at that point left to go work on another case.
So in the brief discussions that you had with whoever this was, were you briefing them on the events of what had happened up to that point, or?
So Detective Coons and Detective Duncan were present, along with Detective Werther. There was a crime scene technician as well, and they were briefly discussing some of the artifacts that they had found in the search warrant and kind of what they were going to do. And I indicated if I wasn't needed, I was going to go work on other casework.
Okay. And then you left shortly after that?
I did.
About what time do you think that was?
I honestly have no idea.
Do you know what time we got back to the house?
I don't specifically recall, no.
You indicated that when we came back to do the, for Alex to do the walkthrough, that you realized you didn't have Charles' phone, is that correct?
They had indicated prior to you coming back that they had not recovered Charles' phone. So when you returned, I asked you and subsequently Tylee about Charles' phone and where it was at.
And did she hand over the phone to you right away, right?
She did. She picked it up out of the cup holder and handed it to me.
And that's where it had been pretty much the whole day since I ran out the door with it.
I'm going to check to speculation and testifying. Sustained.
And then you asked us for the code, is that correct?
I did.
And Tylee gave you the code, is that correct?
Correct.
And that was about what time?
It was later in the afternoon, but I don't remember what time.
And then what happens to the phone as far as chain of custody? What happened from you taking it from Tylee to where it went next?
So So our computer crimes detectives work within the main station where I work. Most of our detectives work out of there. And they do the physical exams and the downloads of the phones, computers, electronic devices there at the station. Our property room is separate. It's about a mile away from the police department. So typically when we have cell phones or devices that need exams, we will immediately deliver the device to the computer crime section. Their workspace, their cubicles and workspace upstairs is a dedicated locked area. The only people that can get into where their cubicles and exam space are the detectives that work in that area. So it sounds silly. We go up and bang on the door and get in touch with somebody, and we will turn devices over to them. And then in our property section and our report management, we do what's called an evidence continuity sheet. So that shows how items travel from place to place, person to person, like a phone to a computer detective, or like evidence from the property room to the lab or something like that. So we will physically hand over items to the computer crimes detectives. Often cell phones have very time sensitive criteria as well. So we don't typically impound them straight into property. They go straight to a computer crimes detective.
Okay. So I'm going to backtrack a little bit. Thank you for that. I'm going to backtrack to, from your hands, it goes into a evidence bag?
No, it's usually in a bag. It's not sealed because we hand it over because they're going to do an exam.
So who did you hand it over to them at the station, or did you give it to someone else at the house?
No, it got handed over at the station in their workspace. They typically don't come out to scenes unless we request them. So the majority of the time we're turning evidence over to them at the station or their work area.
Okay. So just so I understand, it went from you to them.
Correct.
So you had it in your hands and delivered it to them at the station that day?
I believe so, yes.
And so you, according to the grand jury, it was at 3:11 p.m.
Your Honor.
Oh, sorry.
The objection sustained.
My understanding was that it was about
Hold
three.
On. Hold
objection.
On. Let's break for the evening recess. Let's have the jurors report and be ready for 10:15 tomorrow morning, 10:15. Please remember the admonition.
All rise for the jury.
Please be seated. The jury is no longer present. All right, you can't phrase questions as your understanding or what you believe or what you remember. All those are forms of testifying, so you have to be careful how you ask your question. Also, I sustained an objection because of the reference to the grand jury and what was said in the grand jury proceedings. You can use that time and ask the witness, is 3:30 sound right, for example? But let's move on. The reason that I allowed in the various different clips of the defendant's statement over the defendant's, I should say, interview at the police station, over the defendant's objection, Rule 106 isn't really applicable in that situation. Rule 106 is intended to complete a statement when only a portion of the statement is offered and it distorts or changes the meaning of the actual statement. And it's really meant for very short statements, not entire interviews or versions of what happened. Additionally, the state has the discretion to only admit certain parts of your statement that are admissions. They're not going to admit statements, nor should they admit statements that are self-serving hearsay. So there's a reason why your interview has been cut up into different pieces. That's just for the record. Let's have everyone ready at 10 a.m. tomorrow. We'll discuss those other
motions, give the defendant a chance to meet with her team about those other motions that we talked about this morning. So we'll do that at 10. We'll have the jury here and ready to go at 10:15 to resume with this witness. Anything else from the state?
Here, Your Honor.
From the defense?
Yes, we have one item, Your Honor. On Thursday, we were handed this by the state in the morning. It's a new extraction of the devices of Charles Vallow, and it's the gray key that we had requested, but none of them open. So we have a flash drive, and we got it to our expert, and now it's...
Go. Go there.
You what?
I have to go see him. He doesn't.
So they're not opening. So I don't know if we need to get a new extraction or if it was tested before it was handed over.
I don't know if it's a matter of what program's being used to open it. Do we know? I think we need more information.
Yeah. We can't utilize it if it's blank.
Well,
is it
Mr. Dworkin says he can't open it at all?
It's my investigator that can't open it, and then he'll hand it over to Mr. Dworkin.
Why don't you just tell me, sir? What's your name for the record?
Jeff White.
All right. What's the problem?
I tried to open it. I had Lonnie on the phone this morning. He's out of town, but he is on his way to. He's on his way back. He won't be here till probably 6 to 7 o'clock tonight. And I need to go up and see if he's able to extract any information from it.
Are you just trying to click on it and opening it, or are you opening it with a particular program?
I sat with him, and we were going over things for about 4 hours this morning.
Okay. I guess, where's the extraction coming from? Who's handing that over to you?
That is the Chandler Police Department handed over the raw data from Gray Key. So it's just raw, random data, so I don't know it.
So it's not, is it?
It's not parsed into any sort of way to read.
The reader. That's what I was working with Lonnie.
There is no reader with it. It would have to be then input into a Cellebrite to parse the data. It is the gray key raw data.
All right.
And I was trying to do that this morning, and that's what I spent 4 hours doing this morning.
I think unless you have a Cellebrite account, you're not going to be able to open that.
I have two different kinds of... I have the old version and the new version of Cellebrite, and I couldn't get them to open. The Cellebrite that they gave us is an old version, the 7.2, I think it is. And I think
they gave us? We didn't give you Cellebrite.
It's on the...
That's a UFED reader. That's not Cellebrite.
The Cellebrite is on the Discovery, I'm sorry?
With the Discovery we just handed over?
With the Discovery that was handed over before, it's downloaded onto my computer.
No, I think that's right.
All right.
With the FDRs.
I'm not sure that that's correct. I think that it would need to go to Mr. Dworkin to review.
Is there someone at the police department that Mr. Dworkin can maybe get on a call with to try to figure out what the disconnect is here?
Well, he should be, hopefully, in the next hour and 40 minutes, he'll be back home.
I guess if he has a problem, I mean, obviously I have multiple problems with the fact that we're still talking about an expert that has been presumptively precluded.
Right.
While the state is nearing ending its case in chief.
I guess it could be for the next trial, but I don't know that that's going to happen either.
So I guess I would need to know first if that's actually a problem for Mr. Dworkin or not. And then if so, we would have to try to, perhaps he could explain why it's a problem.
I guess, is there someone Mr. Dworkin can, a contact point to try to figure out why, if it's a problem on this end versus that end?
I don't know, have anyone off the top of my head. My case agent is out ill today, so I couldn't tell you who that would be.
Okay.
Your Honor, she had an expert come to testify this about the gray key. I don't know if he's a person that was on the stand on Thursday that we could ask about this. I don't know if he made the extractions and gave them to the prosecution.
I don't know if that's technically an extraction as opposed to the raw data.
That is just the raw data.
I'm still trying to figure out, is there a problem with what's been disclosed or is there a problem with who's trying to open it, the correct programs?
I guess, get with Mr. Dworkin later tonight and see if it can be resolved. If not, I'm going to have to figure out who he needs to contact or try to problem solve tomorrow sometime.
We'll let you know in the morning, Your Honor.
But again, this is unlikely to be an issue for this trial, but it could be something for the next trial. All right, we'll be at recess. I wish I had a better resolution, but I don't right now.
I'm traveling. I have two different forms.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.